Hi, I'm Brian.
And I'm Sharon.
I had a 40-year porn addiction.
Porn was an unwelcome guest for 32 years of our marriage.
I found hope and freedom when I attended a Gateway to Freedom weekend.
And I found hope and the courage to begin my healing journey while attending Wives Care.
Don't be like us and allow porn to wreak havoc in your lives.
Reach out to Be Broken today.
To learn more about Gateway to Freedom, 3-day intensive for men, and Wives Care online groups, visit BeBroken.org or call 210-822-8201. That's BeBroken.org or 210-822-8201. Good day, friends. Jonathan Darty here with another edition of the PSR Podcast. We're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help individuals and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. In this episode, we invite back our friends and counselors, Matthew and Joanna Rabsmith, to talk about the crucial role of boundaries in restoring marriages after betrayal, particularly sexual infidelity. Matthew shares insights from the perspective of the betraying spouse, emphasizing self-reflection and accountability, while Joanna offers guidance for the betrayed spouse on navigating emotions and setting personal boundaries. We delve into defining boundaries as supportive frameworks rather than punishing limitations, avoiding misuse of boundaries for control, and harmonizing them to foster safety and mutual respect. The Rabsmiths highlight the importance of individual responsibility and how boundaries can create a safe space for healing and rebuilding trust. To download the Rabsmiths free honest connection guide, visit renewingus.com/pure sex radio. For additional resources, visit BeBroken.org or check out all the links that we're going to put in today's show notes. And of course, as always, friends, please rate and review the podcast after listening to help others find it. Now let's dig into today's conversation with Matthew and Joanna. Well, all right. We have back with us Matthew and Joanna Rabsmith. Welcome back.
Thanks so much.
Good to be back. Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So we had you guys, the last time we aired a broadcast with you was actually December of 2022.
Wow.
And you guys did a talk on rebuilding a healthy marriage after betrayal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I'm super excited to have you guys back because in that conversation, we sort of did this real broad kind of overview of like, man, what are the big stages of like the journey of healing and rebuilding a healthy marriage after betrayal? I'm so happy to have you back because we get to sort of hone in on one very particular aspect of that. But before we get to that, I mean, considering, you know, 2 or 3 years have passed here, any new updates in kind of the Rabsmith team and anything that's been going on with you guys?
Well, we still do this work. We love this work. We still work with couples who are wanting to really rebuild and truly rebuild something special. I think that's always been our heart, is for couples who don't want to just survive infidelity, betrayal, problematic sexual behavior, right? Whatever really impacts them, they really want to thrive. They want to have great relationships that they love, that they're excited about engaging.
Yeah.
And so we continue to do a lot of that. We wrote a book finally that was, you know, in years of development, actually got out into print. It's called Building True Intimacy. And we got to write it with a good friend of ours, Dan Drake. And we got to release that last year. And we continue just to try to grow our work with couples and really try to help better understand things. We're learning new things every day and really like being able to just to continue to share that with couples in this journey.
That's great. Well, we'll be sure to put the book in the show notes too, because I think one of the big highlights from the last time we talked that a lot of couples responded to was y'all's intimacy pyramid.
Yeah.
And just how that really crystallizes a lot of what some of this looks like, because we all want to know what's the stages, where am I at? What's the marker that I'm on? And that helps a lot in that.
So. Yes. Great.
Totally.
Well, let's talk about then boundaries in marriage restoration. And first, I'd love to just start with definition. Like, how would you guys define boundaries? What are they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the ways that we have found it helpful, boundaries is a very loaded term. You know this. You probably get a lot of questions around this. And I think the term itself, there's nothing wrong with it. But one synonym we will sometimes use is to think about boundaries as a structure rather than this kind of limit or wall. It's really about what's the kind of structure that I can create for myself personally and that we can create for our relationship that's going to help us thrive.
So the way we'll use the word is when we talk about boundaries, it's something that's the individual kind of personal thing that I can set, right? That I determine for myself. I kind of have full power over. When we're talking relationally, there has to be a collaboration. There's two people there. And so we build a structure together. And that structure actually provides safety for our relationship. Again, a lot of times people hear boundary and they hear, oh, this is something that's going to divide us or limit us or actually hurt relationship. We see it as completely the opposite. I'm actually able to thrive in my relationship when we have a very clear structure, right? If you imagine, like, I like living in a house with walls, you know, if I had a tent flaps and that's all, right? Like, I don't think I'd feel very safe living in the world in the tent full time. And so there are a lot of places we get it. We get where that structure creates safety. It's the same with relationships. So I think people have to really start to reframe how they understand boundaries as this positive, helpful healing thing for me individually and for our relationship.
And we think about boundaries a lot around this idea of responsibilities. They're really ways of helping to clarify what are my personal and relational responsibilities. So I have personal responsibilities and I have relational responsibilities. Boundaries are designed, or structures designed, to give me the best chance to meet that. That's what's going to let us create a really healthy relationship.
Yeah, you know, as you're talking about just kind of structure and everything, my wife and I will watch a lot of these, you know, sort of house remodel type things. And there's only so far that you can go with an open concept. Like, there still have to be out exterior walls, right? You got to keep the weather out. And you probably don't want an open concept all the way into your bedroom. And so there's a sense in which you know what's supposed to happen in certain parts of the house.
Exactly.
Now, and I love that framework of how you guys are trying to describe that. Maybe on the flip side, what would you say boundaries are not? Like, what are they not? Because I think that's sometimes to define something what it is, it's good to say what it's not as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We can probably name what they don't do well. I think what people usually use boundaries for is to create relational avoidances. They want to keep things off the table. And so they say, okay, I'm going to put a boundary around this. And really what they're meaning is, I don't want to deal with this. And because I don't want to deal with it, I'm going to keep it off limits. And so a lot of boundaries become that. We also see boundaries becoming this kind of manipulation or leverage, right? This power move. Okay, this boundary is going to be used to try to demand something of someone. And it might work. I mean, I can get a lot of things through demand. It's just that demand doesn't increase desire. It doesn't increase partnership. It doesn't increase... it doesn't increase what we actually want. It gets the kind of base need. If we think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? It'll get some of those base needs, but it won't get those higher level needs, and especially relationally. And I think that's what we found with so many couples is they would come in with these boundaries that they'd had in place that was giving them some of the very basics, but was actually preventing them from achieving the kind of relationship they want.
Yeah, I was moving them in the complete wrong direction relationally, even if it created some momentary safety in the relationship, right? It became a very transactional relationship that there's no mutuality, there's no cooperation, collaboration. And so, when boundaries are used in that way, they're not helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we see a lot of times where people, one of the first places people go wrong is they think boundaries are things that I choose for other people, when boundaries are always what I choose for myself. If I am setting a boundary for someone else, I am usually their parent. And that might be helpful if I am their parent. But if I'm their spouse, that becomes exceptionally unhelpful. And so in a lot of places, we've seen relationships where they get into these parent-child dynamics. And so I think I know what we're supposed to do. I put a boundary on you. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it might work in terms of getting something accomplished, like keeping you away from something that's destructive, but then it hurts because it actually doesn't allow us to be partners. Yeah, I don't feel any safer if I've boundaried you, and you usually don't feel any more confident because you've been boundaried by me, right? You've been parented by me. And so one of the first places we usually help couples is going, you need to set individual boundaries for yourself first, right? We have to get out of the practice of setting boundaries for other people.
That's good. And even in the parent, you know, analogy, it's like, you can only go so far with that. If I'm trying to put boundaries on my 24-year-old daughter, guess what? I'm out of bounds, you know? So,
three-year-old.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of the couples that we serve in our ministry, they're coming from, there's been a sexual betrayal of some kind in the relationship. Now, I think a lot of what we're going to talk about is going to apply to any kind of brokenness or betrayal that can happen in a marriage when both spouses are choosing to say, we want to try to restore what has been broken. Yeah. But just so kind of our viewers and listeners know, the angle that our ministry comes from at Be Broken, we're really dealing with sexual betrayal. Mm-hmm. When that happens and when a couple sort of navigates the chaos of the explosion of that, kind of the discovery and then figuring out what's next, and then they get to that place where they say, both of us, and this is key, both of us are saying, we want to go on a restoration journey.
Yep.
When and how do boundaries start to get set up kind of in that restoration journey?
It has to start right away, I think, where sometimes it goes wrong. We've seen recovery journeys look like, and we predominantly work with women who are the betrayed partner, and Matthew works with the betraying spouse. Oftentimes in recovery, it's put on the betrayed spouse to create the boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, you've been hurt, you're unsafe, you need to create some boundaries to create safety, which there's a lot of like good thinking in that, right? Thinking. But it has to start with the breakdown of boundaries was not with that person. It was with the other person who chose to live in addiction or chaos and go outside of the relationship. That's where the boundary breakdown was. And so boundaries have to be rebuilt day one, starting with the betraying spouse. They have to start to learn how to boundary themselves. Any good recovery is going to start from that place. Understanding, why did I not boundary myself and my behavior and my choices? What's underneath that? What do I need to do to heal and be able to do that reliably and responsibly in this relationship? If they're not leading the way in that, it's going to be really tempting for that betrayed spouse out of that seeking safety to do it for them.
They kind of become the parent, right?
I'll do it because my safety depends on your ability to get this right moving forward. And so you can understand why then if that's not happening, that betrayed spouse jumps in pretty quickly to do that work.
And so before we move too much farther from that, because Joanna, you deal with a lot of women who have experienced that betrayal, how do you sort of help them hold back? Because I mean, here's the thing that we've seen so many times is it's coming from two places. One is it's coming from a deep sense of fear, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think it's also coming from a deep place of love. They love their spouse. Totally. They love the relationship.
Totally.
So how do you help convince them it's not a good thing for you to just take control, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's hard, right? Because that like fight or flight, when you go into that place, if I'm feeling unsafe, I usually want to, you know, control or escape or, right? We have those coping behaviors. We go in fight or flight, right? And so first it's really actually teaching them to be self-aware of what they're feeling and why they're wanting to react in that way. And so being able to slow down and get in touch with their emotions or what is getting triggered, because there's no way to change the behavior if I can't regulate the emotion. And so it's going to be almost impossible, even for partners who go, yep, this behavior doesn't make sense. I realize it doesn't ultimately get me the safety I want, but I still do it because I feel so unsafe. So for them, learning to understand what they're feeling, learning to trust their gut, and learning how to be assertive in healthy ways. That doesn't mean you're totally hands off and you're like, well, hope he gets it together. But it does mean you learn from a place of regulation to be assertive around, we kind of mentioned earlier, personal boundaries and relational structure, right? So one of the things I help partners do is communicate clearly and assertively the type of relational structure they are willing to exist in, right? And so one of the pieces, there's a therapist who talks about sexual addiction or acting out behaviors, like there's this secret sexual basement, right, that the partner didn't know about. That comes to light, right? There's honesty, and that partner goes, you know what? I'm not going to live in this house anymore with this secret sexual basement. I'm out of here. You're welcome to join me.
In our new house,
but I can't force you to. But I'm not going to stay in this house with you, right? I'm not willing to exist in this relationship the way it is now.
Mm-hmm.
So communicating very clearly. And then that's where the personal boundaries come in. Sometimes partners will want to say that, but then they'll keep living in that destructive house, right? And so the personal boundary is getting up, walking out of that house, right? And that can be a lot of different things. It's very unique to their relationship, what's going on, right? But that personal boundary is going, I'm going to honor what I said in terms of I'm not okay with this relational structure. I won't move forward in this relationship.
Now, Matthew, since you primarily deal with the betrayer, what does it look like for them to really embrace this idea of boundaries? And I really would love for you to speak into, especially the issue that we see in a lot of men, especially of kind of a sense of passivity around, I mean, one of the reasons a lot of men get in these betraying situations is because they're kind of a passive man. Yeah. They don't take responsibility for their character, so what does it look like to really get the betrayer to embrace the idea of boundaries? And like you said, they've got to do it for themselves, not for their spouse.
That's great. And I think it starts with that self-honesty. I mean, we've said honesty is the base of the relational pyramid, but it's also the base of the personal pyramid. I've got to get real. I think one of the most eye-opening experiences for me was when I did my first full disclosure, and it actually wasn't with Joanna. It was in a men's intensive, and they asked me to really name what my sexuality specifically had looked like. And what was so distressing was it was so disconnected with what my core value was. I really believed growing up that I had a value that treated women respectfully, that honored who they were, right? Honored that they were made by God, honored that they carried this image of the Creator. But as I looked at my sexual history, I could see my character did not match that value. And in confessing it to men and to people who loved me, right, and supported me, but having that place of confession really helped me see that disconnect. And it was seeing that disconnect that inspired me to say, no, I don't want this anymore. I want my value to match my character, but I can see that it isn't. And I think without that internal motivation, you will be very passive. I think when shame takes hold, when our kind of powerlessness starts taking over, we get very, very passive. And I think that's why confession is so important, that I have to name, and I name that disconnect. Now, if I haven't named my value, it might be hard for me not to, you know, name that disconnect. So sometimes the place I'll start with guys is I'll just say, what are the things that you value? What kind of man do you want to be? Mm-hmm. You get to decide. Don't let your partner decide that for you, right? You decide for yourself what kind of person. And I've yet to have a client, and I've worked with hundreds, probably thousands of men now, and I have yet to have a client who didn't want to be anything less than an incredibly loving, honoring, respect, right? Like you start to hear people who have betrayed others and their core values aren't different than those who haven't. It's just, I haven't honored it, right? I haven't matched it. And so once we see that disconnection, then we just say like, okay, then let's create connection. Let's connect our values to our character, to the way we live. And we do that through boundaries, right? Boundaries is that kind of piece, right? And so I go, okay, I have this value of respecting people. I don't live that out. Right? Or I have this value of being transparent and I don't live that out. How do I do it? I create a structure for myself that works, right? And so, you know, some of the structures for me that worked was to be in a meeting every week with people who thought like me and struggled with it, with what I struggled with, right? Just being around others was a boundary, right? It was a structure for me that helped me to connect, right, honesty, right, the value of honesty with living transparently with other people. And so that really helped to kind of pull those pieces together.
Now, as you're working, because in some ways we've sort of broken this up and said, okay, let's look at the betrayed spouse, let's look at the betraying spouse and look at kind of what they need to do personally for their sense of owning their boundaries. But now let's bring the relationship together and say, okay, it, you know, it's one thing for you to be in separate rooms of the same house and saying, what sort of walls and structures do I need around myself? But we're living ultimately in the same space.
Yeah.
What does it look like now to have those boundaries sort of harmonize or connect, or there's agreement? In other words, how does a couple together start to say, yeah, we need a wall in this part of our house, or we need to break that wall down? What does that look like?
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the things we talk a lot about when we work with couples is that the choices, the decisions that we make individually and in our relationship, for our relationship, they shouldn't conflict. Right? Like if something's good for me individually, it shouldn't be bad for the relationship. We have yet to see that where it can't be a three-way win, where it's a win for me, it's a win for you personally, and it's a win for the relationship. And so when we're talking about boundaries, right, if I'm taking responsibility for myself in a healthy way, if I'm living out my values on a regular basis, if you're doing that, like that should mesh pretty well. And we should be able to come together and decide the type of relationship we want to live into. Now, it can be very helpful to have some other voices speaking into this process, because for most of us, we haven't had a lot of practice with this skill. And so that, I think that is very helpful for a lot of couples. But understanding they don't have to conflict is important.
I also think it's helpful to know what season they're in. One of the reasons we created the intimacy pyramid was because we wanted for couples to understand that this is a journey. It's a journey that never stops. We're always on the journey. We're kind of continuing to reinforce it, but there are different seasons. And so for instance, early on in discovery for a couple who's wanting to restore, you usually have two traumatized individuals. You have a betrayed partner who's traumatized because of that betrayal, right? That relational betrayal. And our experience is that I've yet to work with someone who's struggling with problematic, addictive, or destructive sexuality who doesn't have their own trauma, not usually in the relationship, but usually prior to. What we know is unresolved trauma will not allow for intimacy. It will not allow people to be the kind of partners they want to be. And so one of the ways we think about and we will guide structure for couples early on is say, you will be doing more individualized work. You will be focused a little bit more individually in your healing and worrying less about where the relationship is. Yes, there are relational things that need to get figured out, and you will probably have some dynamics you'll want to change that don't have anything to do with sexuality or betrayal. But for right now, let's create space, right, for that individual work, but then for that individual work to be shared, right? So we'll talk about like, okay, yeah, I might be doing a lot on my family of origin work. I might be seeing a therapist or a counselor. I might be doing some deeper healing around that. And I'm going to be sharing with that person before we really get into the heavy partnership that we will see later on in the journey. And so I think it's helpful to know that, because I think some couples, they 2 weeks after disclosure, they're ready to kind of get back to everything as if it's normal, recognizing that's probably not the season you're in. As the season changes, our structure changes. We usually have less rigidity, more flexibility, more freedom, because we've proven we can kind of handle that dynamic.
Yes. So a practical way that might look is like early in recovery, couples may have a very structured check-in that happens on a daily basis because they're trying to build that reliability, that safety back in. As a lot of recovery years are put under their belt, that safety, that trust is there, and may become a much more organic check-in throughout the day because they're already naturally more connected and they don't need that structured daily check-in in the same way. So it can change a lot throughout the course of the relationship.
Yeah. Now, the big million-dollar question that probably, any couple that stuck with us to this point in the conversation has been wanting to hear all along is, All right, what happens when there's been a violation of any of these boundaries? How do you navigate that? I mean, it's one thing to set up a structure. It's another thing to say, I kind of punched a hole through that wall, or yeah. I didn't abide by whatever the boundaries were.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think first, if it's a personal boundary, right? So if I've set a boundary for me personally and I've crossed that boundary, we think introspection, right? This is reflection is the first place that I go. What led me to this? I need to figure out why this occurred. There's a reason for it. And it's not that I'm evil and I desire evil things or I desire to hurt, right? There is good in my heart, but it was marred. It was blocked by something. What was it this time? And it's that reflection that lets me say, okay, I know this was my goal. I know this is what I wanted, right? It didn't meet. Let me see where the breakdown is. And then I take it upon myself to create new structures, new boundaries, right? New responses to deal with that rather than kind of asking my partner to deal with it, right? I take responsibility for it and continue to move forward.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest kind of what he was talking about earlier in terms of those values, one of the things we always start with is, was this boundary given to this person and they took it on, but it doesn't really align with their values, or they haven't seen the alignment yet? Because guess what? Those boundaries will always get crossed. And so it's just a matter of time usually before that boundary gets crossed. So we kind of have to rewind a little bit and go, wait, did this person understand how this boundary helps them better live a life in line with their values? Because if so, they should want that boundary in their life, right? Like, they should be really happy that they have that boundary because it helps them live the life they want to live. If that's how the relationship to the boundary is only going to work for so long. And so sometimes we have to reevaluate that or get back to that place. And so thinking through that, if that is the case, it is aligned with their values, but they still crossed it. We might have to rethink sometimes we'll call them like the habits. So you have the boundary, you have the structure, but how do you actually live it out, right? If I go, you know what, I really, this new year, I want to start eating healthier, but we keep all the same food in the house. And I don't actually think about that goal at any point, right? Nothing is going to change. I actually have to change my habits, the way I live my life, in a way that's going to now remind me of this boundary. Because what I'm saying in creating a boundary is I want to start to live differently. But it is really hard for adults to create new habits. I don't know if you've ever experienced that, right? But it is so hard for us as humans. So going, okay, do there need to be different habits in place that are going to help you be successful in honoring this goal or this boundary?
I honestly didn't like your food example because I immediately thought, I can't get rid of my Oreos. There's no way those are going out of the house. Now I know there's couples that are listening to us that they're in all sorts of parts of this journey. And some might be at a place where they're just wondering, I don't know if I have any hope. I mean, like, we both want restoration, but I mean, this whole idea of structure, and I feel like we're starting from just a foundation. There's no walls at all in this relationship anymore. How do we do this? How can boundaries actually establish hope for the relationship? Because I think, again, where we started the conversation, the common misconception of boundaries is I'm creating a wall that's going to create separation between us. And that's not a hopeful message. So how can what you're talking about with boundaries actually create a sense of hope for a new future?
Yeah. I think structure or boundaries create so much safety, right? We keep reiterating that, but we can speak maybe personally from even our experience. And I know the first time I felt hope was when a pastor spoke in one of my grad school classes about his journey out of sexual addiction. Talked about the structure, the resources in his recovery program, right? That he took part in that led to the freedom. And I was like, there it is. I finally felt hope because I saw that structure. I saw the boundary, right? Of what that looks like. And so that's really what started our journey. And then as he started recovery and I saw him drawing boundaries for himself, It's the first time I begin to feel some safety, right? That, wait, because I knew I cannot be responsible for his recovery. I mean, I could. I was capable. Mm-hmm. Like, here's all the things you need to do. But if I was the one leading and driving that constantly, I would never feel safe in that relationship, right? Mm-hmm. Never truly. I wouldn't feel as chaotic as I had been, but full safety would never be reestablished. And so as I saw him demonstrating the ability to draw boundaries and live in line with those boundaries, gave me so much freedom and so much hope as a partner.
And I think going back to something I said earlier about reflection, I think we don't do enough reflection because we can do reflection when we've struggled, but we should also do reflection when we've succeeded. Mm-hmm. I can remember how the structure of my early recovery just helped. It felt so much better. I went kind of old school with the 12-step group. I had a sponsor who was like, hey, here are the things that are work. If you want to work with me, you do those things. But one of the things he told me to do is he said, every day I want you to think about how your boundaries, right? How your structure served you. And so I would do that, right? Part of my daily reflection would be like, how did this help me? How did having covenant eyes on my computer help me today, right? How did it benefit me? How did it bring life to me? Or how did making this phone call to someone in my group, right, really give me what I needed? The way that I think we bring hope is what the Bible teaches us, right? We testify to where God is working in our life, right? Mm-hmm. He is working in my life through these things. Then it makes it not a chore, right? It's not this like kind of penance that I'm given, this punishment that I'm given, but it's this invitation into life. And so I think doing that regularly helps reinforce why we have these things in place.
Really, our mindset, our attitude towards boundaries, it matters. And if those boundaries are going to be life-giving or not. I remember early on in our recovery, because trust me, you can view it either way, right? Like at one point, Matthew, right, was on his phone and started complaining about covenant eyes again. And I said, I can't do it, right? So I was assertive and I named a relational structure. I cannot live in a relationship where we view these new boundaries that we have to heal as negatives in our life.
Right.
And that's not going to work for me moving forward. And so we shifted to that seeing those as positives.
Yeah. I love that because that one simple yet not easy shift in perspective can make all the difference, because it's kind of the way that I think of people when they maybe first come to faith in Christ and there's this excitement of being forgiven. And then they start trying to figure out, like, why are there so many places where, like in the Psalms and David would talk about, I love your law. I meditate on your law. I can't get enough of your statutes. And we've come from a place where we say the law is a negative thing. It tells me what not to do. It tells me it's got all this restriction. But then in the light of a new way of seeing God, you go, that's right. Master me, control me. Your way is the best way. There's no other way. And so I think what you're talking about here is you're saying these structures, these boundaries, they are not something that are going to constrict and strangle you or your relationship. They're going to give you a whole new way of living that really does thrive and is wonderful. So I mean, obviously we've only scratched the surface of what really can be dealt with here, but I want to give you guys kind of the final word of just hope that you'd want to give to couples out there. And then also, where can our listeners and viewers go to learn more about you and the resources that you guys have?
I think just one word of hope we have is that the work you start today will pay off. It will pay off. And so, It's amazing. We're 12 years into recovery, and it's amazing just the benefits, right? We're getting to reap so much that was sowed. Mm-hmm. And we could see that even early on, but now it just continues to get better. The work has not stopped, right? We continue to sow, and we continue to reap. And so if you're in that season where you're like, I don't feel like I'm reaping anything good, I guarantee you, if you sow good, you will reap good. That will be the case. Mm-hmm. And so the work you put in today, I think, will matter. And so I really want to encourage people in that. It does really start today. In terms of connecting with us, we would, you know, you're welcome to kind of reach out. We've got a link that we'll put in. We've got a free resource that we love to give. It's actually a structure for couples to use to connect, right? Each day we call it the honest connection, because we know that connection is key, but a lot of couples are like, how do we do that? Right? How do we do that well? How do we not make a mess of that and never want to do it again? Right. And so we try to help couples with these resources just so that they find success easier and easier.
I love that. And we will absolutely be sure to put that in our show notes. But Matthew and Joanna, thank you guys for being open with your own story as well, but also for the work that you're doing and just for being with us today.
Of course. Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Well, listeners and viewers, we are going to put lots of great info into the show notes, so please check that out. And of course, we're here to help you take your next best step towards wholeness in Christ. So please reach out to us, and we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.